But she asked me something about speaking, and I said, "Oh, I got a couple sermons within me," and she took me up on it. So, as you know, many preachers on TV start off with a little joke. Even Abe Lincoln said that God must have a sense of humor. He said, "Look how he made me." That was Abe Lincoln's way of introducing himself. So I just wanted to tell you about this young minister who was trying to be very dramatic, and he had the text, "Behold, I come." So he read very formally, "Behold, I come." And then he reached down very low and quietly said, "Behold, I come." And then really for emphasis now, he stood back and he charged up to his pulpit, which was an old wooden pulpit projecting out over the congregation slightly. And he slammed himself into it and he yelled, "Behold, I come." And the poor old thing collapsed and he ended up in the front row with his head in the lap of the poor little lady. He jumped up and he apologized and he apologized, and she says, "That's okay, sonny. You warned me three times." So, enough of the silliness. My sermon is called Close Calls because several things have happened in my life. Each of them, as they happen, could be simple enough, could have been tragic, and none of them were. As you know, as some of you know, I've worked on tugboats. My grandfather had a tugboat business, so even as a boy, I was around tugboats. I knew how to be safe and where to do and what you were allowed to do. When I got older, I actually worked there. And when you're towing a barge, sometimes there's no bargeman aboard, sometimes there is. And when there isn't, we're paid a little something extra for handling lines. And handling lines means the big, heavy boat, raw hawsers that are ropes like this thick. They have a big eye in the end, and you get close enough to the pier, you can get that eye on a bit or a bollard or something, and then you bring that back, and there's a big thing like a figure eight as you make fast, and you can hold the line and get the barge spotted where it needs to be. So as we were approaching the pier, we're going down the river, it was a cold day, the wind was picking up, and water was flying a little bit on the through the air. Not it's cold, but didn't pay any attention. I went over on the barge, I was the deckhand, and the captain is still in the pilot house. And I grabbed this hawser, you put an eye up on your shoulder, and you grab some length, and you walk up the deck, and you grab some more, so you have plenty of line up where you need it. You're going to catch that first line up near the bow, then you'll pull up and get the barge along where it needs to be. And as I walked toward the bow of the boat, I wasn't thinking about how cold it was, and the water that was flying up had turned to ice. And as I had passed the last rail or anything to hold on to, I'm very near the bow of the barge, my feet would just slide. Here I am, just sliding, nothing to hold on to. And somehow, there was a bare spot, and my foot stopped there, and I stopped, and I was fine. Of course, it scared the heck out of me. I've carefully backed up, got all over the railing, and I didn't approach the barge at the bow until we stopped. And then I got the line and very carefully got us made fast. And the rest of the way went normal. I don't know if anybody else even noticed, but I had a pretty good scare. Another time, as you might know, on a tugboat, your deck is sure high. And on the side, there's a what they call the waist or a rail. And it's about knee high, maybe a little below your knee. And when you go to step off onto the pier or go to a barge or whatever, you either climb over it or you might step up on it to climb up to reach for something a little higher. And this one day, there was ice on the edge of it, which I didn't know. And as I put my first foot up, much like you might stamp here, and then go to really lean on it, well, my foot slipped off. And my shin went down the edge of this steel. And of course, it's hard and cold. And it hurt all the way up my shin. I thought, sure, I had broken my leg. I didn't know what. And I pulled up my pant leg and looked. There wasn't even any blood. Apparently, because I had maybe two layers of denim and maybe some long underwear, there was enough padding that I was fine. It hurt, and I continued what I was doing. And wow, that was lucky. So that's twice. Another time, I was working at home, and my brother and his partner were helping me remove the old stucco siding, and we were putting up sheets of insulation followed by aluminum. It looks like shingles, but it's all done in aluminum siding. And sometimes I worked when they weren't there. They worked mostly in the weekend. They had other jobs. It was a part-time job with them. And because it was my brother's family business, I was working with him, I could do some of the work myself to help save a little money. So I had this old wooden ladder. I had a big, heavy steel ladder, aluminum ladder, and it was an extension ladder. You could pull the second piece up and get really high in places. But it's very heavy to put up. You can hardly do it by yourself. It was so heavy. I got the best one they made because I was pretty heavy in those days. And if you stand on a step rather than a rung, it's a little easier on your feet. But because I was doing it by myself, I used one of the wooden ladders that they had left in my house. And it was old. And it had been an extension ladder, so you could bring a second wooden ladder up beside it to get higher. And they have these metal brackets. But I just had the one base one. Got it up beside the ladder. I'm up there. And I'm trying to take this stucco off the side. It's all stuck. So I'm pulling. Well, I'm not realizing, but as you pull, you know, your weight's kind of going up and down. And like I say, I was about 50, 75 pounds heavier in those days than you see me now. And the rung broke, and I dropped one step. Thank God my feet landed on the step, the next step down. Had the ladder been at a sharper angle, perhaps I would have fallen between it. And who knows how bad your leg could have been hurt or whether I would have ended up on my head at the bottom or who knows what. But I just dropped one step. And as I looked down, this metal bracket had caught my pants and ripped about a few inches. Now, suppose I'd been leaning a little harder and it caught skin. I'd have been bleeding to death still standing on the ladder. So that was another time that was a bit of a scare. Anyway, I continued work on the boats many times. In later years, I was working for a small company with a little tug called the Reggie B. And this was after my family's business, family's tugboat business was gone. But I was working with Jim and Dick on the Reggie B. And there's a company in Philadelphia called River Associates. And they take oil to ships that are in port and help take supplies to them. And while a ship is at anchorage or loading or unloading supplies, oil, water, various things are brought to them. And they had a small barge, clean as a whistle inside, for pure water. And they load it up at a city pier someplace, just like we would go get a pitcher of water. Well, they get a barge load of water with pumps and things. And like maybe it comes in by gravity, I'm not sure. But anyway, they load it up. They have pumps on board, and they can pump this water onto the ship. Now, the reason you have to do that, these ships mostly can make water. They can take salt water and desalinate it and turn it into fresh water. But sometimes things go wrong. Machinery breaks down. For whatever reason, this ship had gotten as far as the anchorage. As you might know, many refineries are up the Delaware Valley. And they all have tankers. These super tankers might be 60, 70 feet deep in the water. Our channel is 40 feet deep. So they come in down by Lewis and Cape May, and they come up as far as the Big Stone Anchorage, and they drop anchor a little beside the channel, and still wide open. You feel like you're still out in the ocean, but you're now in Delaware Bay. And they wait there for these giant barges to come down. Many of these barges are bigger than what we knew as a World War II tanker. These are huge barges. And they come down there and they begin to unload the oil. And barge load after barge load comes up. And as the ship is lighter, it raises. And finally, when the ship is up to about 40 feet or thereabouts, it can come on up. Meanwhile, they're in bad need of water. So the little water barge had been ordered down. Their tug must have been in repair or doing a something job. So the little Reggie B is towing. No, I take it back. They had gotten the bigger boat. We were on the Ella that day. We were on the bigger boat, the Ella. Yeah, I guess we wouldn't have taken the little one down there. We'd taken the Ella down there, which was a pretty good-sized tugboat, but she was old. And it was a very rough day. And the further down you go, the river gets wider, and you're not that far from the ocean by the time you get to the anchorage. And the wind was really howling. It was blowing up there. And when we got alongside the ship, we were really taking a pounding. And we got the barge where it needed to be. And he got his hoses hooked up. And he's trying to get his pumps running. And We came back out of the way thinking if we got behind the barge, perhaps it wouldn't be quite so rough. As we're coming alongside the ship, we were just being pounded like crazy against the side. And the one waist on the rail, on the waist of the boat, you could see it moving as the ship hits it. I mean, I'm thinking, this does not look good at all. And the captain, I'm sure, was looking at it. And while we're all trying to decide whether we should stay here or what to do, something took a funny bang, I don't know what, but I was caught off balance. Now, the ship is here like a wall beside you, but we're moving back and forth against it. My original inclination was to push off of it, make sure I was back on safe. But if the barge or the ship and the boat are moving apart at that moment and I try to push, I'm going to fall between the shore, and the next bang, that's going to be the end of Don. So I'm literally balancing. And from somewhere, the littlest guy aboard, Dick, who was maybe half my size, Dick Merkel, ran into me like a football tackle and knocked us both down the deck, soaking wet, but on board safely. And he literally saved my life, because going between them would have been really bad. So anyway, the last one I want to tell you about, I was hired by a bigger company that had oil barges. They bought a new tugboat from Tidewater down in the Gulf of Mexico. Tidewater is a huge company that tow those oil rigs out of the Gulf where they drill for oil. And one of their large tugboats was getting too old for their work, I suppose. And Compass Marine, who I was working for at the time, I guess it's about the time I started working for them. I had been a dispatcher for them in their office, and they knew I had tugboat experience, and they needed an additional crew to go down to Morgan City, Louisiana, and bring this tug home. And to my surprise, they hired Dick Merkel, who is the same guy I worked with that saved my life that day on the Ella. And so Dick and I are going down there, him as engineer and me as deckhand and cook. And the captain and his mate were hired locally because they knew the Gulf waters and had often delivered gambling cruise ships and God knows what, because they were good navigators. They knew their way across the oceans. You could put them in the water here and say, come ashore at Barcelona, and the first land you see would be right across Barcelona. They knew all about navigating and all that. But this was a different job, and we're supposed to bring this big old tug through the inland waterway, across Florida and the Gulf of Okeechobee, and up the inland waterway to bring it home to Philadelphia. This is a big square tugboat, way bigger than anything else I'd ever worked on, three decks high to the pilot house, two huge engines down there. Each of these engines is bigger than your car. I mean, these are giant engines, you know, they tower over you. Noise like you wouldn't believe. You put earmuff things on to protect your ears down here when you start these engines. So we're coming along from Morgan City in towards the Gulf, the Mississippi. We went in the Mississippi a short distance, and then we get off again at a place called, amazingly, the Industrial Locks. If you remember during the bad hurricane when all the flooding came about, it was the Industrial Locks and the areas near it that failed. And it was night when we got there, so I didn't realize it, but we were way above the town. The water is actually higher than the town. It's all levees and dikes holding the water out. So the ground, I don't know if the ground has sunk or what's happened, but anyway, we went through it at night and I didn't even see some of that, and it was way before the hurricane. But we went into the Mississippi and back out again through a series of locks. And all along we get to certain places and we're nudging the bottom. This boat is a big boat, much bigger than is often in the inland waterway. Maybe that's why Tidewater is getting rid of it, I don't know. But they took her into the Gulf, and so we weren't worried about it. And we got to a certain point, and the captain and mate talked it over, and they decided that the best thing to do, instead of nudging the bottom the whole way around, because as you know, the Gulf is a long way around, and then we didn't have to go all the way around Florida. When you get to about Tampa, there's a little inland waterway that goes into the Gulf, to Lake Okeechobee, and out to the Atlantic side. So that was where we're heading for. So long before we got to all that curve, they decided to go straight across the Gulf and down to here. Well, again, turned out to be a rougher day than anybody thought. And we were taking a pretty good pounding out there. We started getting water in the galley. It was coming from around the air conditioner. Well, I guess they never took high seas on this inland boat. And so we were out there trying to tape up the thing and make it safe. And water's coming through. Nothing to be worried about. It's just a mess, a wet mess, you know. But we're taking this pounding, and we did finally get to Tampa, came inland, and again got aground. I think the mate was a good pilot for out in the ocean, but he couldn't steer worth a hoot. The engineer who was with me said that he would make a good minesweeper because he went up the river like this. He would have swept all the mines from all the river because he just wasn't a good steersman. So we did better if me or Dick were steering and him just telling us what buoy to look for or whatever. But anyway, we were coming along at the inland waterway into Lake Okeechobee. Now there, it's wide open, it's flat as a pancake, and buoys across, just like you're in a river, there is a one deep spot. Well, again, with Dick, Captain Dan steering, he was all over the channel. And at one point, he was far enough out of the channel that we ran onto something that this time wasn't a sandy bottom. It was rocks, coral, God knows what. But whatever it was, we were hard aground, and I didn't know it, but Dick, the engineer, already knew we were taking on water. Now we're taking in water in the engine room. So I'm up there cooking dinner. I hear Dick running up and down the outside deck doing things. I don't know what. And he finally sticks his head in and says, "You know, we're sinking." And I said, "Dick, we can't be sinking. We're on the bottom." I mean, you know, but he meant, you know, the work would be ruined. The water would be full. The engine room is going to be full of water. So I stopped what I was doing, turned everything off, and went down to see how I could help. And we weren't sinking, but we definitely were taking on a lot of water. So they got help to us, and we made a patch and got the thing aground, and I got floated, and we got a little further along, and the temporary patch came off, and we started taking on water a second time. Now we're out on deep water on the Atlantic side. And again, everybody who had a boat in all Florida, fish and game, wildlife, Coast Guard, you name it, everybody who had a boat was there. I think we almost had 20 people on board, all with various uniforms, and some with guns and some with badges, and some, I swear, they had fishing nets with. Anyway, they all came and made sure we were safe, and we got a second patch on with a couple of bolts holding it. And at this point, the company said, "Try and get as far as Jacksonville into the shipyard." And when we got into the shipyard, the boat goes on a railway, and it's lifted up, you know, just like pulling something out of the water, and now sitting up here high and dry. And for the next week or so, we're going to be in the shipyard. And Dick and I have really very little to do except cook some meals and look after things and maybe straighten up a little bit. So naturally, we go under the boat and looking at what's going on. And they took four sections of steel, maybe this wide by 6 feet long, four places in the hull that they cut away. And the steel was much thicker than this. It looked like tin can. This had been steel like this, and either from salt water or from sliding on the bottom or from what, I don't know. But this was thin. Like I say, it looked like tin can metal. And all I could think of, we'd been pounding away in the ocean. No lifeboat. This is an inlet. We don't carry lifeboats up down the river. You can swim ashore from wherever you are. We all had life jackets, but no lifeboat. Coast Guard had a fit over it, you know. And we were all safe. They put new bottom of the thing in the boat again. So this is about five times that I can think of that things happened in my life that could have been tragic. None of them were. So what conclusions can you draw from this? I'd like to say that, well, because of that, I changed my life and became a great preacher and saved the world. But that's not true. But the fact is, if you live your life the way you know you're supposed to, I truly believe God looks after us. And if we all do the best we can and be the best person, man, woman, child that you are, that you can be, God's there looking after us. And he truly helped me on a number of occasions. Could have had a bad broken leg. I could have fallen overboard. I could have just been slipped there. Who knows what? Some of them might not have been tragic. Some of them might have been. But at any rate, Lynn is not a widow. Sheila is not an orphan. And here we are today. So thank you very much for your time. Remember, God loves you.